I was born and raised in Laguna Beach. I was born and raised actually in Laguna Canyon, on Canyon Acres and on Castle Rock Road. So when I was a kid, we had mountain lions out in our parks. We had deer in our backyard. It was really an amazing place, not just to grow up, but to explore and to connect with the wilderness.
Visitors to Laguna Canyon are consistently amazed by its serenity and stunning beauty. In town, people take our natural resources for granted as an ingrained part of our identity. What fewer people are aware of is that once upon a time, they were under threat, and that green spaces we cherish were actually born out of a stunning clash of art, activism, and development. I'm Rachel O'Neill Cusey, and this is From Radical Origins, Visit Laguna Beach's series about our town and the stories that make it a California icon. Episode 4, Protect and Conserve, the Creation and Preservation of Laguna's Natural Spaces. Act 1, Art and Nature. For over 150 years, Laguna's canyons and beaches have attracted visitors enamored with natural beauty. But if you ask Hallie Jones, one group was especially important.
If you go back all the way to the early days of the plein air painters, they were using art to capture this natural beauty that couldn't be found anywhere else.
Hallie Jones has been working in environmentalism for close to 30 years. Today, she's Executive Vice President and Chief Program Officer at the Crystal Cove Conservancy. And like so many other members of conservation groups in town, she fights to protect the one-of-a-kind beauty that artists saw.
Even today, I think the arts community and the environmental community are absolutely connected and should be working together every day to improve our community and to make the world a better place.
In fact, you can say that this work really started all the way back in 1926, after the Pacific Coast Highway was built. A population boom was expected. Artists helped incorporate the canyon into the town to protect its natural beauty. For decades after, Laguna's green space was a combination of privately held and county lands that were still largely undeveloped and ripe for exploration.
I grew up in the 1980s. I was a latchkey kid. I went to school and I came home. And back then we had horses in Laguna Canyon. So when I got home from school, I would hop on my horse and I'd go trail riding. And I never thought about the fact that this was Irvine Company land or, owned by somebody other than me, right? It was just part of my backyard.
It's easy to see why locals were lured into a false sense of security. But when someone else owns the land, the question is never if it's going to be developed, but when. In the 60s, a local bookstore owner saw the writing on the wall. After a fateful trip to England, he hatched a plan to protect the area.
Jim Dilley, back in the 60s, went on a trip to England and was inspired by the drives that he would make from village to village with these beautiful green belts in between them. And he came home back to Laguna and thought to himself, I want to start a green belt here. And that vision really inspired so many people in the community.
Former city council member Tony Eisman remembers his style as tough, but certainly effective.
He was a character, not necessarily friendly, or he was rather abrupt, and he didn't suffer fools. And he's a story of detail on understanding what he did and how he managed to go to the Orange County Board of Supervisors and convince them that what he was talking about was important and bringing them along.
Before he passed away in 1981, Dilley's Laguna Greenbelt Inc. was able to convince the board to secure Sycamore Flats, a patch of land at the end of the canyon. Today we call it the Dilley Preserve in his honor. Dilley affectionately referred to this area as the buckle of the Laguna Greenbelt. It would become a beachhead for a much larger conflict. 2, the fine art of activism. From Crystal Cove all the way to Newport Beach, Costa Mesa, and beyond, much of the land surrounding Laguna is still owned by the Irvine Company. Like Hallie, Chad Nelson, the CEO of Surfrider Foundation, remembers that in the 80s and 90s, much of it was still cattle ranches.
I grew up in North Laguna. There were cows behind my house. I used to go poach those lands mountain biking in the late 80s and early 90s, and it was Irvine Ranch. It was not necessarily this healthy, pristine ecosystem. It was cattle land, you know, and a lot of that was ultimately going to be slated for development, which we've seen all across Orange County, whether it's Crystal Cove or Ladera Ranch or everything else.
While the Irvine Company makes a point of leaving land alone, no one can depend on those promises.
The Irvine Company's job is to develop, and they are some of the better developers that we've had in Southern California, and they have planned communities, and there they are, you know, very, very predictable and comfortable and with a lot of amenities and so forth. And I just think they looked at this juicy morsel, which they owned, and said, well, this is next.
Okay, but what exactly did being next mean?
It was going to be an 18-hole golf course and a strip mall and mansions, you know, like Shady Canyon.
And while no one took notice at first, Toni made sure she was going to change that.
I learned to read standing in the back of a 1949 Ford convertible going up and down the hills of Iowa. The signs are spaced so that in a car you can read the message. And I thought, well, we could do that. It'd be free. The first Burmeshave signs were see the hills, the open space, they'll disappear without a trace. Irvine Company.
Toni became Laguna Beach's secret Paul Revere, warning the town that the Irvine Company was coming.
So I became the Phantom of the Canyon and went to the hardware store and bought this wood and cut it up and got the big stencils and this and that, and then wait until 11 or 11:30 at night and go out and pound them into the ground and make sure they were far enough apart. It was fun, and the fact that it was secret made it a lot more fun. And at one point, there were reporters hiding, waiting to see if they could catch the person putting up the signs. And Ken Frank was city manager at the time, and he would take them down really fast, and which was very upsetting because it probably took a good 20 hours to do the fine poetry and put up the signs. But finally, he let it go a little bit longer. And the goal of the signs was get the community talking about what's happening. It was an alert. Let them know that this is coming.
It worked. Just as art put the canyon on the map, art was now playing a key role in saving it. And Toni wasn't the only one merging art and activism to protect the canyon.
My name is Rick Conkey. I'm the founder and director of the Laguna Beach Cultural Arts Center.
Rick Conkey created the Cultural Arts Center to host artistic events in town, but it was also the studio of one of Laguna's most prominent photographers and a key activist in the push to save Laguna Canyon.
Mark Chamberlain was an artivist. An artivist is a person that uses art to spur positive public change. That's how I would define it. When I met Mark, he was a tennis player, one. But then when we got to talking, we realized that I realized I had a nonprofit. Our slogan was harnessing the power of art for the benefit of the community. And I realized he had this term artivism. And it was just interesting how we both kind of came across the point that art has a unique ability to reach around people's defenses and fears and get and release them to where they can actually listen to what they actually already know.
While Toni was putting up signs along the canyon road to warn Laguna residents about the pending development, Mark Chamberlain and his partner, Jerry Birchfield, used the town's newfound awareness to create a message for the Irvine Company and the world.
The Tell is, like, I think it's one of Laguna's greatest achievements. The Tell was something that came together from Mark because he wanted to stop development in Laguna Canyon. And his idea, and this was with Jerry Birchfield and some other people collaborated with him as well, but they used an art installation that was 300 feet long. 80,000 photos were donated by people to tell the story of Laguna Canyon. It was installed about out near where the toll roads are, what, 5 or 6 miles from the coast inland. And 300, and it ended up getting regional press, LA Times, Orange County Register, even national press. And Donald Brin was the developer at the time that was going to develop Laguna Canyon.
The piece was rich in meaning. In archaeology, a tell refers to an enormous artificial mound containing layers of lost civilizations. These layers literally tell the story of societies that came before them. By accumulating 80,000 photographs, Chamberlain and Birchfield created a multi-generational message, a big stop sign from the civilization of Laguna Beach to the Irvine Company and its CEO, Donald Brin.
And the press was so positive, it actually ended up the event when they did the christening of it. 10,000 people walked from Main Beach out to the Tell to christen the piece. And when all that coverage came along, Don Brin said, "I am not developing the canyon. I promise I will never do it." And it worked.
Hallie Jones was 10 years old during this march and remembers it vividly.
It wasn't just the community in Laguna Beach. It was the environmental community in the county as a whole. And when the community got wind of that, they collectively decided this is not what we want for our canyon. I remember the march through the canyon because I lived in the canyon. So I was, let's say, 10. I don't even remember how old. And waking up and having the sound of traffic just be gone because the road had been closed, and there was the opportunity for people just to get out there and march in the sunshine through, you know, one of the most beautiful stretches of our town. That passion, that collective excitement about making a difference, it was palpable.
And in classic Laguna fashion, it was a chance to get fabulously and righteously weird.
People were picketing outside Donald Brin's house. They were chaining themselves to bulldozers. They were dressing up in deer costumes and marching down Laguna Canyon Road, all to fight against this proposal.
The march was more than just a powerful display. In addition to this on-the-ground activism, Laguna's citizens taxed themselves to buy the canyon. Remarkably, the Irvine Company listened and accepted a $20 million down payment.
So Donald Brin, who was, you know, then the head of the Irvine Company, agreed that the Irvine Company would sell the land to the city of Laguna Beach. And that victory, right, is it wasn't just one. There was that initial purchase and then subsequent purchases of so much more land, so many more acres. And that's how we ended up with 22,000 acres of open space.
The results of the Greenbelt speak for themselves. Thousands of Laguna residents hike, ride, and enjoy over 22,000 acres of virgin land like nowhere else in the world.
And that open space isn't just dirt. I speak with a lot of people who are like, "Oh, it's just brown. There's not really anything that lives out there." And that's not true. We're surrounded by some of the last endangered coastal sage scrub habitat left on the planet. So we've got species that exist only here. We've got endangered plants, birds, reptiles, all of these amazing creatures that call this place home, and they've got no place else to go. It really is a treasure.
Act 3, from Greenbelt to Bluebelt. The battle for the Greenbelt was only the start of a new project to protect our coves. When Tony Eisman first moved to Laguna, the coastline was just as biodiverse as the hillsides.
I was limited as to my immediate environment when I first moved here. You know, I met the people who wanted to go diving with my then husband, you know, and bring back the abalone for free food and the lobsters for free food.
By the 80s, though, things had changed dramatically. Today, Chad Nelson is CEO of the Surfrider Foundation, in part because he witnessed egregious damage being done to Laguna's coastline.
There was a couple formative things that happened when I was younger that kind of were both sort of shocking and also opened my eyes to the need to get involved with more conservation. One was I was a lifeguard down at one of the beaches here in town, and it was early in the morning, there was no one on the beach, and I watched this, you know, front loader, like bulldozer, drive down the beach with its like, whatever its thing, scoop up in the air. It drove right down to the water, and I'm looking at this thing thinking, what is this guy doing? And he just went down to the water and dumped, I don't know how many, like dozens of gallons of yellow paint into the water. And they just had finished painting the streets with the stripes. And so, you know, the guy had this front loader full of yellow paint, and I guess didn't want to deal with it. And so he just dumped it in the ocean. I was like, you can't really do that. You know, obviously this is illegal. It was just shocking that there was this mentality that like, oh, the ocean is where we can get rid of all of our junk and our crap.
A shocker to absolutely no one was that this was also not great for biodiversity in our coves and shorelines. In addition to acute sources of pollution, everyday access to our reefs was reducing the fish population.
So that was one of those things like, okay, that's clearly wrong. We got to find ways to make sure that people don't think that's, you know, allowed. And then the other was I grew up, you know, snorkeling, and then I got into fishing and spear fishing, and I'd go out and, you know, with my buddies, and we'd try to catch fish off the coast in Laguna. We just couldn't catch any. It just was largely devoid of life. They call them urchin barrens. They were like, the kelp beds were covered in purple urchins. You could see them as far as you could see. And not a lot of fish and not a lot of kelp. So we went back and asked the older lifeguards, you know, like, what's going on? Why can't we catch any fish? What are we doing wrong? And the answer was, it's fished out.
Chad wasn't the only one noticing. For Mike Beenan, this degradation looked like human-led destruction he had seen before.
My journey into activism began when I was in Vietnam, and I saw the cruelty of war as well as the environmental destruction. We don't really understand how damaging wars can be to the environment as well as to the people. And I think when we go through traumatic experiences in life, we can come away with either a lot of anger, a lot of empathy, or maybe a lot of both. And so moving into the anti-war movement for about 10 years, I used my art to promote awareness of the wars that we're involved with. And then I decided to move to my real love, which is the ocean, and switch from doing social justice issues and more towards environmental issues.
Mike was part of the original Greenbelt movement and inspired by it.
The Greenbelt movement probably started famously with James Dilley, and he noticed it in Europe. And then others of us embraced that idea and tried to expand it to South Laguna, since South Laguna is part of the whole contiguous Greenbelt area. I was involved with civil disobedience, arrest actions, helping to put on concerts in the canyon. So a lot of these programs require a support element. And since I was a sergeant in the military, I understand how to organize support elements for these various environmental issues.
Mike, like James Dilley, developed a bold vision for a protected area like the Green Belt, but at sea.
I think the goal of the Blue Belt is to bring people together, get us working together to restore the marine protected areas in Laguna and to make us a model for the state and even the country.
We'll let Chad Nelson give us a definition of the space.
So Laguna kind of calls this thing the Blue Belt. It's somewhat unique, that name, and I think, you know, it's meant to match the Green Belt, which is clever. But at the end of the day, you know, it's a marine protected area, an MPA. This is a term used to manage a section of the ocean. You know, in many cases, and I think this was part of the resistance, you know, the ocean has been sort of this like zone which that's a free for all. There's no rules. You can go out there in your boat. You can drive anywhere. It's not private property. You can kind of do whatever you want to do out there. Now we're starting to kind of organize our uses and our conservation of the ocean. So a marine protected area will do that. So Laguna's dubbed theirs the Blue Belt, but that's sort of a unique term to Laguna and a great one, I think.
Like the Green Belt, there were conflicting parties with strong points of view.
There was a lot of fight, and, you know, in some ways I think it foreshadowed the sort of weird sort of binary world, tribal world we live in today, unfortunately. California Fish and Wildlife meetings, and that one side of the room would be red shirts, the fishermen opposing the plan, and the other side of the room would be blue shirts, the environmentalists and citizens who wanted protection. It was ugly. There was distrust on both sides. Surfrider actually tried to play the middle ground and support, kind of connect the dots, because we have a lot of fishing surfer folks inside Surfrider, but there really was no middle ground, which was unfortunate.
But perhaps because of previous environmental success, there is no need for an epic showdown.
You know, to the credit of the process, they actually built these committees with wreck fishermen, commercial fishermen, conservation groups, other recreational uses, tourism.
Like Surfrider, Mike Beenan played his own part in finding ways to get input from everyone.
We started holding meetings at various restaurants in town to get input from people. So we had spearfishing groups, we had fishing groups, we had lobster fishermen, we had environmentalists, all meeting, breaking bread, and arguing for hours. And what I tried to do was sit back and just take notes. And after about a year of this, I pointed out that we all agreed that education is very important. We're all still learning about the Green Belt and the Blue Belt. The second one was protection, that we need to follow the rules and regulations that protect the area, and fishing community needs to follow the fishing regulations. Then the third area was water quality, that it doesn't do much good to protect the environment and then dump our waste in the ocean. So we've worked very hard on water quality. And when you put those three things together, you set up the situation for restoration.
And there were like dozens of maps and variations looked at. They had to meet the scientific criteria and then try to match the interests of the community. So from a process standpoint, I think it was a really good process. It was thorough.
After 10 years of wrangling, the Laguna Beach Blue Belt Coalition finally got the Marine Reserve approved. Like the Green Belt before it, the coast is flourishing.
There's this 10-year review, and so we're, you know, there's been a bunch of science and monitoring of the marine protected areas over the last decade, and we're seeing incredibly positive benefits. So if you go out there on your stand-up paddleboard, if you go snorkeling or diving out there right now, you just see an ocean that is richer than it was 20 years ago. There's thriving kelp beds. There's a ton of fish. And the diversity of fish has increased, and the size of the fish has increased. And there's a lot of interactivity between these things too. So the lobster have roared back, you know, 225% more lobster than in the past. Well, the lobsters help keep the urchin population under control, and some of the fish do too. And the urchins are what were killing the kelp. So instead of having this sort of negative feedback loop, we now have a positive feedback loop, which is increasing the health of the place.
While Laguna is proud of its conservation efforts, they shouldn't stop with our town. Mike and Chad believe it's a model of local activism that can be exported far and wide.
Laguna Beach, I think, is the only city in California or the country with a contiguous green belt and a blue belt surrounding the city. And that's a powerful model for our 6 million visitors who come every year to visit us. And we hope that some of them go back to where they live and protect their blue element. It might be a creek, might be a lake, it might be the ocean. But I think once people see a group of folks like the Laguna Blue Belt successful, it inspires them to do something similar at home.
I think that the conservation story of Laguna Beach shows the power of citizen activism to actually make a positive difference, whether it was the green space or the blue belt. Fundamentally, the scale and size and effectiveness of those required government, but that was all driven by local activism. And so you can see the results of the hard work that activists put in. And so, you know, that should be, I think, a lesson to all of us, that if you kind of lean into these issues, you really can make a big difference.
And just like the effects we see in the Green Belt and Blue Belt, a strong history of environmental activism can create a positive feedback loop for better change. Mike and Hallie think about it every day.
There's an old saying that courage is contagious. So we hope to inspire our visitors to share the courage that we have to restore their habitat.
And I think every day about what this community would be like if they hadn't succeeded, if people hadn't stood up back then and fought for something that mattered to them. And I take that and I think today, like what am I standing up for today that 30 years from now, 40 years from now, 50 years from now, people are gonna look back and say, gosh, I'm so glad that they did that, right? I'm so glad that they made that difference.
Protect and Conserve is a story from Radical Origins, produced by Visit Laguna Beach in conjunction with Laguna Sound. This episode featured Mike Beenan, Rick Conkey, Tony Eisman, Hallie Jones, and Chad Nelson. It was narrated and created by me, Rachel O'Neill Cusey, written and produced by Skylar Vanderveen, John Zegowitz, and Linda Pribble. Special thanks to the Visit Laguna Beach team and board of directors, as well as our friends at Schieffer Chop Shop.